What happens when talks of peace turn into mere propaganda? When the West turns a blind eye and leaves Ukraine with nothing but empty promises? In this episode of In Crisis Mode, you'll hear voices from Ukraine. A journalist, a diplomat, former Ukrainian ambassador Andriy Melnyk, a soldier, and a medic. It's about weapons, disappointment, and the struggle to keep going.
For many people, like the daily statements from the Trump administration are just meme in Twitter or Facebook. But for us, it's life, it's our lives, and the lives of Ukrainians.
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode. I'm Jan Jessen, a war and crisis reporter for the Funke Media Group. You'll find my reports in the Hamburger Abendblatt and the Berliner Morgenpost. Just a few weeks ago, I was in eastern Ukraine, observing the situation at the front. I saw destroyed villages and cities, spoke with soldiers about their expectations for this year, and yes, it's clear that peace is still a distant dream. The war continues relentlessly. We're now in the fourth year of this war, and despite ongoing diplomatic efforts from the U.S., it shows no signs of ending. It's not a frozen conflict. Russian forces continue their attacks, in fact, more intensely than half a year ago. Major offensives are expected this spring. This war is alive, and it kills. It takes the lives of countless soldiers at the front. That's always the most heartbreaking part of my visits. Watching the graveyards grow, filled with flags marking the fallen of Ukraine and the military units they served in. These graveyards keep expanding, but civilians are dying too. In April alone, two major Russian attacks occurred, one in Kryvyi Rih, President Zelensky's hometown, where 18 civilians were killed, and another in Sumy, a city near the Russian border, where 37 people died in mid-April. During Easter, Russia announced a unilateral 30-hour ceasefire. But the shelling never stopped. Some areas quieted down briefly, but dozens of offensive operations still took place, not just against military targets, but civilian ones too. In response, President Zelensky proposed a 30-day ceasefire for civilian areas, a gesture that has gone unanswered by both Russia and the US. And so, the war grinds on. People in Ukraine are, understandably, war-weary. Everyone I speak to is tired. A cloud of resignation hangs over the country. The situation at the front is dire. Russian forces advance daily, capturing territory. Ukrainian troops try to hold on, but the exhaustion is deep. People desperately want the war to end. But the big question is, how will it end? And what do people really think about the so-called peace initiatives, such as those proposed by the US? I talked to several people about this, including journalist Artem Lysak, who lives in Kyiv. He's witnessed the 2014 Maidan protests, the annexation of Crimea, and both the 2014 war and the 2022 full-scale invasion. He represents an entire generation.
Sometimes I open my Facebook friends page and I can count how many of them are no longer alive, you know, because of the war, of course.
Artem, whom I met a few months ago, now works with us as a fixer, someone who knows the area inside out. He helps plan our reporting trips, secures access to locations, and acts as our translator. He has also worked for major international media like Sky News and spent over a year undercover on the Russian-occupied Crimea until he was briefly arrested and expelled. He's a brave and deeply engaged individual. When Artem says negotiations with Russia are a farce, it's not cynicism, it's experience.
Talks between US and Russians, I think it's simply a farce. You know, all the Russian propaganda cliché now are going from White House. I mean, it turns out negotiation just means listening to Russia and repeating its talking points.
Another key voice in this episode is Andriy Melnyk, the former Ukrainian ambassador to Germany. You might remember him as someone known for speaking undiplomatically, especially when criticizing Germany's hesitancy to deliver weapons to Ukraine. His tweets and statements were blunt and stirred controversy, but they also highlighted real policy failures. Currently ambassador to Brazil, Melnyk will soon move to the United Nations in New York. He shares Artem's views.
Putin verfolgt eine ausgeklügelte, perfide Verhandlungsstrategie.
Putin follows a perfide strategy. Maximum demands presented as compromise while secretly intensifying warfare.
Er versucht das Ganze als einen angeblichen Kompromiss zu verkaufen. Und heimlich Kriegshandlungen intensivieren, immer neue Drohkulissen aufbauen.
Putin, he says, uses a calculated and devious negotiation strategy, making impossible demands while secretly escalating the war. Russia insists on keeping annexed regions, even those it hasn't fully captured, like Zaporizhia, Kherson, Luhansk, Donetsk, and of course Crimea. Every time Ukraine proposes a peace plan, Russia simply ignores it. Meanwhile, the Trump administration claims it could end the war within 24 hours, but its rhetoric mirrors Russian talking points. U.S. special envoys now even suggest Ukraine might have to give up land, especially Russian-speaking areas, which is a harmful oversimplification. Trump goes so far as to blame Ukraine for the war. This makes true negotiations almost impossible and incredibly easy for Russia to exploit. Melnik has clear demands. He wants Germany to act, not symbolically, but effectively. To be fair, Germany has become Ukraine's second most important partner, after the US. It has supplied valuable systems like the Gepard anti-aircraft tank, the Iris-T air defense system, self-propelled howitzers, Leopard 2 tanks and artillery. But Melnik says it's still not enough.
Das heißt, dass der neue Kanzler Friedrich Merz.
This means that the new Chancellor Merz should announce a new course on May 6, the day he takes office. On the one hand, to massively increase arms deliveries to Ukraine in close coordination with European partners. On the other hand, to tighten sanctions on Russia significantly. This includes a complete halt to imports of Russian LNG gas. It includes cutting all Russian banks off from the SWIFT system. It also includes a total ban on Russian government bonds on EU stock exchanges and much more. If Chancellor Merz takes these bold steps, believe me, he will automatically be invited to the negotiation table. Because he will be holding incredibly strong leverage. Leverage that can help stop the war.
Relations with Germany have improved, but the core issue remains. Everything took too long. We debated for months whether to send the PZH 2000 howitzer or Leopard 2 tanks. The fear was always the same, that Germany would be seen as a party to the war, that if we sent heavy weapons, Putin would consider it a red line. There were worries that Germany itself might be targeted. But those fears proved unfounded. A key example is the Taurus missile system, a long-range cruise missile similar to France's Scalp or Britain's Storm Shadow. Ukraine desperately needs these weapons to strike behind Russian lines, to cut off supply routes and weaken frontline forces. But once again, the argument against delivery is the same. We could become a party to the war. I believe that argument is nonsense. And I believe Germany could have done much more, and it would have been truly helpful if Germany, along with other Western partners, had supported Ukraine from the beginning with what it asked for, what it needed, and what would have helped militarily to stabilize the front. This also applies to sanctions. The fact that people in Germany are now once again considering the possible reactivation of Nord Stream 2 certainly doesn't help Ukraine's negotiating position. One person who's experiencing the full brutality of this war is Mitya. He's a soldier stationed in the Donbas, near Kostyantynivka. I've mentioned Mitya in the podcast a few times before. He used to work as a fixer for us until he was drafted last year. Now he's with the 28th Brigade, stationed at one of the hot zones along the front. I talk to him regularly about how he's doing and what his thoughts are. I recently spoke to him again, and he shared his views on the current situation. His words are powerful and moving. Behind every statistic, there's a family, a story.
The situation in the area of responsibility of my unit is very difficult, I would say. And not because Russians are, I don't know, swiftly advancing or something. They do not, but the cost we pay for holding them back is very high. And it's not only the raw numbers of casualties or something, but the damage they are inflicting by, like, killing every soldier, because behind every fallen soldier there are families.
As I mentioned, Mitya used to be a fixer and a journalist. Recently, he's been really struggling. His mood has become increasingly bleak, especially since he's part of a combat unit. He hasn't yet been right at the front line, what he calls the meat grinder. He describes the situation near the front lines as horrifying, with drones constantly in the sky, making movement nearly impossible. Mitya fears he might soon be sent directly into the thick of battle, and I had the impression he's been teetering on the edge of depression in recent weeks.
Right now, there are just dozens of drones simultaneously in the air, so it is almost impossible to make some sneak moves. You cannot sneak in or sneak out from the frontline positions without... You almost can't do that. I don't know. We need to figure out something to get ahead again.
Otherwise, it becomes increasingly difficult to reach the front because drones are also present in nearby towns, attacking anything that moves. The Russians even use decoy drones, which land and wait, sometimes at bus stops, before launching attacks on passing vehicles. They target everything: civilian cars, military vehicles, even ambulances. The battlefield is now completely transparent. As Mitya said, it's almost impossible to move without being seen by surveillance drones and then attacked, whether by kamikaze drones or those dropping explosives. This also makes it incredibly hard for us as journalists to report from the front. Coverage is becoming more dangerous and limited. Another person we've spoken about on this podcast is Katerina Krapisnikova, a combat medic in the 47th Brigade. You might remember her story, especially that of her fiancé, Oleg, who was also in the 47th and died in February of last year. His death was a devastating blow to her. She once shared the story of their relationship with me. It was deeply emotional and moving. Katerina has seen countless wounded soldiers, not all of whom she was able to save, but she keeps going, every day.
One of the main challenges, though, for us as the casualty care providers is the quality of the evacuation routes. The risky conditions of the tracks damages the evacs more often, so in order to be on spot for the next casualty extraction, we need to repair vehicles constantly.
What Katerina describes mirrors what Mitya says. Russian drones attack everything. Evacuation teams, medical vehicles, field hospitals. The rules of war, like the Geneva Conventions, seem to hold no weight here. Even vehicles marked with a Red Cross are not spared. This makes the situation incredibly dangerous for field medics like Katerina. Adding to this, under the Trump administration, USAID, America's International Development Agency, has been effectively dismantled. Billions in aid have been cut, affecting not only Africa, where many now suffer due to lack of humanitarian assistance, but also Ukraine. USAID had supported countless people in frontline towns, funding organizations that delivered food, helped evacuate civilians, and provided medical care. That support is now largely gone. It's a harsh reality, one that pushes Ukraine further onto the defensive and drags down public morale. People feel abandoned, particularly by the US, even though Europe continues to stand by Ukraine. These developments are deeply troubling. Many had feared what might happen if Trump returned to power, but no one expected it to be quite this bad. Everyone I've spoken to in Ukraine says the same thing. Peace can only be achieved if the West acts decisively, and more decisively than it has so far. With the US stepping back as a reliable partner, the responsibility falls more heavily on Europe and on other willing nations like Australia, Japan, South Korea, and Canada. Ukraine still needs weapons. It needs long-range weapons, artillery ammunition, air defense systems to protect cities and prevent tragedies like those in Sumy, Kryvyi Rih, and elsewhere, where many civilians have died in Russian airstrikes. Ukraine needs humanitarian support, and above all, diplomatic backing. What the Americans are currently doing, repeating the Russian narrative, is simply unacceptable. Suggesting that Ukraine is to blame for the war, or that it could have prevented it, or should now give up everything Russia has taken, is not a basis for negotiations. Real negotiations involve both sides starting with maximal demands and then meeting in the middle. But the way the US is currently engaging makes that impossible. And clearly, the Russians aren't interested in ending this war anytime soon. Putin's so-called Easter ceasefire was repeatedly violated with continued shelling and attacks across the front. That shows a distinct lack of genuine interest in peace. This war is real. It is not frozen. It is bloody and ongoing. Lives are lost every day and people are wounded daily. Ukrainians are tired. They don't want to fight endlessly, but they want to be heard. They want to be taken seriously, and they still want support. This was Im Kreisen Modus, the podcast, produced by Alexander Baumeister, journalist and radio editor at a station of the Funky Media Group. If you don't want to miss an episode, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. Feedback and questions welcome at chrisandmodus@funkamedian.de. Stay safe. Until next time, take care. Bye-bye.
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.